And welcome back to the program. I'm very pleased to have someone who is at the center of research that is being reported in today's New York Times. I like to think we get it on quick and get to the key of the story, the core of the story, with the newsmakers themselves, and we do that with a pretty small staff. That's me, and the help from PRN, the folks back in the studio in New York. I want to thank them for making this show possible. I want to welcome to the program Lori Johnson. She's Chief Economist, Climate and Clean Air Program with the Natural Resources Defense Council, and she is talking about research that shows what many of us have been sensing, that over the last few winters, really over the last decade, we're seeing sparser snowfall, and that's really impacting the ski and snowboarding industry, winter sports industry overall, and there's a lot of concern about that, because even when we do get an occasional good year with a lot of blizzarding and a big snow accumulation, there's an inconsistency factor that makes it very troubling for people whose livelihoods depend on tourism and skiers coming to the mountains and, you know, snowboarding and ice skating, all those wonderful winter sports. Their livelihood could be vanishing, and skiing, as we know it, could be an endangered species. So welcome to the program, Lori.
Thanks for having me, Betsy.
I hope I haven't overstated it. Things are really quite dire, potentially, it seems, and there's been some research that the NRDC has helped compile to look at how we can protect our winters, and looking at the devastating economic impacts so far, and I guess also looking ahead at what might happen if climate change continues to get worse.
Yeah, we basically looked at the difference in skier visits and ski resort revenues between years where there was low snowfall in the last decade versus high snowfall years. And we found about 15 million difference in the number of skier visits, so 15 million less skier visits during the lower snowfall years. And that corresponded to over $1 billion in ski resort revenues. So that was our, you know, top line finding from this. When you think about the future, if we don't do anything about our carbon emissions, excuse me, we know it can only get worse. Can we save the ski industry? Well, we don't know that for sure, but we do know for sure that if we don't start moving towards some solutions, which I believe we have many on hand, we just need the political will to actually implement them, things will get worse if we don't pursue those.
And I know that, is it Auden Schindler at Aspen Ski Resort who's been in the forefront of this effort to raise awareness about the perils that would befall the ski industry if we don't take action?
I'm not sure who you're referring to. I think it goes to a broader question. We like to look at all the different specific impacts, and the more people see the different impacts, the more it becomes real, and we can think, well, are we making an economically rational decision? If we start adding up the costs across everywhere, and this is just one small part of that larger effort, can we start to look towards more rational decision making? And if we look at, for instance, the drought this past year, the record drought, it's estimated that we're actually going to lose about a half of all of the growth we've had in GDP, or our national income, if you will, over the last year. That corresponds to higher food prices, but also a big loss for the nation as a whole, and it corresponds to real suffering. I mean, if you just look at, for instance, in Michigan, the people who are farmers of cherries, 75% of the nation's sour cherry output for pies, 90% of their crop was lost last year, and that was from changing temperatures, I believe, not actually from the drought. So you can add up a lot of different things. We've seen the record forest fires. We've seen what's happened with Sandy and the record extreme weather events. Really no place has been spared in the United States. So these are all costs in addition to the things that we're seeing in tourism, like skiing, that are very costly. And hopefully we will start paying attention to all these warning signs and think about moving towards reducing our emissions, and I'd like to actually say something about how we can do that, because I think
please do. Please.
Better to move towards solutions than to harp on all the problems.
Right.
We actually also just came out with a report looking at what it would cost to go after our biggest source of emissions, which are existing power plants. And we found that we could reduce our emissions by 26% by 2020, which is a very, very good amount of reduction. And we would do that largely through efficiency measures. We waste so much energy. If you just look at what we've been able to achieve with energy efficiency standards, this gives you an idea of how much more we can get. Refrigerators now run on the same amount of energy that the things that are sitting on top of all of our TV boxes actually run.
Wow.
So there's just an incredible amount of waste out there. And so with this analysis, we found that just getting all the states up to speed on the top-performing states and their records for doing energy efficiency, we would have slightly lower electricity prices. It's slight enough that it's really just sort of washes, but the point is that it's not going to make the prices go crazy and all the predictions by industry that the economy will fall apart. It's just a red herring to do nothing.
If we have climate change go unchecked, look at the toll just financially from Superstorm Sandy.
True.
I think last report it was $50 billion. It's up to 100. They were saying the drought is $50 billion and Sandy is 50, maybe adding up to 100. It's up there and it's continuing to rise. So that's the ridiculous argument about we can't afford to address climate change. We can't afford not to.
That's true, and exactly. Even if we didn't find this result, even if we were paying more for electricity, there are ways to mitigate that. It's you can help consumers, you can mitigate their bills if need be, through programs that help people. And apart from that is your very correct argument, which is all the price that we're paying that we don't see at the gas pump when we go there, and we don't see it on our electricity bills, are being paid. And not just climate change, there's a tremendous public health cost from all the fossil fuels that we burn. We're breathing that air. So we have tens of thousands of people dying every year, hundreds of thousands of asthma cases. We have a whole host of problems associated with burning these fuels. So the benefits of actually reducing all of that pollution are huge. And we can't lose sight, as you say, of the cost of not doing anything.
Do you think we need a carbon tax?
We need a price on carbon. I think politically that a carbon tax is risky in the sense that it most likely wouldn't be high enough. It could be gradually phased in, so you don't need to worry about just crazy, you don't need to worry about the economy just sending it into a tailspin overnight. But it's unlikely to be high enough to achieve the emissions reductions we need first and foremost. But we also don't know. We don't really have time to experiment with exactly what the carbon price should be. So we really should be going after things that are more certain, because what is very uncertain is how bad the situation could get with climate change. So we really don't have the luxury of playing around with a tax over many years to figure out how to make it work. We know how to make the Clean Air Act work. It's been incredibly successful, and it doesn't require Congress. And Congress is not functioning.
Right.
So the president has the authority, and EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, has the legal mandate to actually protect the public health and reduce carbon pollution. And it can do that with all these existing tools we have. So that's the good news.
Okay, the bad news is climate scientists say we have, I think at last report it was 3 to 5 years to turn this around, but that was about a year ago. So let's say 2 to 4 years. That is nothing. And we are so not all on the bandwagon, just in terms of, leadership from government, from corporations, from institutions, just public awareness. How hopeful are you that we're really, getting this urgent message out there in time to, we can't stop climate change, but, slow the ravages, begin to turn the ship in time?
Well, put it this way. If I weren't hopeful, I wouldn't be here talking with you. If I had no hope.
Me either, by the way.
As dire
as I make it sound.
Right. And I think we have a lot of things that can be great. We, quite apart from climate change, wouldn't it be great if more farmers could put up wind turbines on their property and still farm, have $8,000 more per turbine in their income, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if people had solar panels installed on their roofs and they could become independent from the grid? That would be awesome. Wouldn't it be great if we had more green roofs? We have a prettier environment. We reduce all kinds of pollution. We'd save energy. These are really great things. We would have jobs that can't be outsourced. We would get energy efficiency savings, as I just indicated, and we could stop mining in places where we're creating massive job losses. If you look at the BP oil spill, thousands of people were put out of work in the tourism industry and the fishing industry. This notion that we're going to lose jobs from doing anything about this is wrong, A, because when you do things, you actually need people to do them. Mm-hmm. But B, there's the issue of the cost of not doing something, and those costs also translate into jobs.
And speaking of jobs, we have a timeshare up at North Star at Lake Tahoe. We're planning to go up there in a week. There's very little snow. Here it is mid-December, approaching Christmas. There's a lot of secondary related industries, not just the resorts themselves, that are hurting when this happens. You know, lodging, restaurants, gas stations, grocery stores, entertainment, but also real estate. They built a bunch of condominiums at North Star mm-hmm. in the last couple of years, too many, certainly a glut. And part of the reason they're sitting empty, well, a large part of it is the economy, but also, you know, the snowfall has been so light and sporadic over the last few years that I think people are beginning to wonder whether investing in, you know, real estate is a good, safe bet given, you know, the skiing future may be a little bleak.
Or perhaps coastlines, but that doesn't seem to stop people.
True.
The ocean is still there, even though the snow might be going.
Well, maybe it's the economy then.
Well, there's also another added effect with a warmer climate, which is not as obvious, but it's the case that when people don't see snow outside their window, even if the snow is in the mountains, they're less likely to go. It doesn't register that, hey, there's some stuff out there we can go and ski on. Even if they don't see it, it's less likely that they're going to go.
Well, Lori, any parting thoughts? We just have another couple of minutes, but I want to thank you for bringing this to the public's attention. It's one of the myriad, many impacts that are beginning to happen, beginning to be felt, but are only going to get worse if we keep our heads in the sand.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, I think, the case. But with our heads in the sand, the water's going to just come and put us underwater with our head in the sand.
With our heads in the melted snow, which will be water. Lori is the chief economist at the Climate Center with the Natural Resources Defense Council in Washington, D.C. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Betsy.
We'll be right back with some good news about new technology making it even easier than ever, to put solar panels on your roof. We'll be right back.